Welcome to The FinTechnologist. I'm your host, Jochen Heusner, and today I'm talking to Dr. Martin Schilling. Martin is an angel investor, startup builder, and scale-up executive. He has co-created and scaled several companies, including a McKinsey subsidiary, as well as the neobank N26. He's the managing director of the German startup accelerator Techstars, and together with Thomas Kluckhist, he's the author of The Builder's Guide to the Tech Galaxy, 99 Practices to Scale Startups into Unicorn Companies. Martin, many thanks for joining me today to talk about your book, The Builder's Guide to the Tech Galaxy.
Thanks, Jochen. Very big pleasure to be here.
I thought to get the ball rolling before we get to your book itself, and whether you tell us a little bit about yourself, your long history in business, and how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, sure, Jochen. Happy to do it. Look, I've been an entrepreneur all my life. I have co-founded and scaled 5 ventures very early on, my first startup directly out of university. And I worked for McKinsey a couple of years building ventures for McKinsey. Then, as you said, I scaled a subsidiary for McKinsey. And then, you know, I was at a point in my career where I said, where I have been saying to myself, I will never work for banks and insurances. And then the founders of N26 called me, Max and Valentin, and they said, hey, we have this great opportunity to scale N26, the fintech, from 300 to 1,500 employees. That's what we then at the end did in 2 years. It was a time where N26 had just found product market fit, where really the ball got rolling. And I had this wonderful pleasure to scale the company in around 2 years, in from 300 to 1,500 people, which was totally great. I then distilled all these learnings into a book. You just said it, The Builder's Guide to the Tech Galaxy, and then rejoined the startup scale-up world by leading now Techstars Berlin. We are one of the largest pre-seed investors in the world, and we are investing in 24 startups per year here from Berlin.
Interesting. Interesting as well, because actually, my question would have been like to, because I did a short summary in the intro about what you've done and your long experience, and you summarized that for us and gave us a little insight into your career as well. But like, obviously, the question someone always asks is like, why? I mean, it's like you're a very busy person, obviously. But like, first of all, where do you find the time? And secondly, why do you dedicate that precious time to writing a book? What's the idea behind it?
Yeah, so first, Jochen, I had some time because I took a sabbatical, and then COVID hit and my son is in the COVID risk group. So I decided, look, I'll protect a bit my son in terms of not going out directly again into the working world, but rather do remotely write a book. And of course, the underlying reason was I and my colleagues, we made a lot of errors during this time when we scaled N26. And I wanted to compile a knowledge base for builders like myself and many others to avoid these errors what we've made. So that was kind of, this was one motivation behind it. And then I'm a deep, deep believer in the European tech ecosystem. I totally believe that this is the decade of us European venture builders, and that we as startup builders need to contribute to solve the big problems of our time. Climate crisis, energy shortage, fighting pandemics, you name it. And startups and scale-ups are building the industries of the future, and being in this environment is just the right thing to do in this decade. As well, because startups in Europe have the potential to build 12 million additional jobs. That's a lot in the next 10 years. We urgently need these jobs because there are many, many jobs that are addressed due to automation and digitization. And so I am a big believer in building companies for the greater good.
Now, you've said like you part of the idea behind writing the book is like that you wanted others, at least that's how I translated, to learn from your own experiences and on your own mistakes. And I always think it's like I should have written down like all the stuff that I've done wrong and helped me, and it's like what worked and what did not work. But I think what you've created here is like actually something that goes way beyond that, just what worked and did not work, because like you really like It's subtitled 99 Practice to Scale Startups into Unicorn Companies. But it actually is such a massive companion of different tools and instruments that work at different stages and for different companies. So maybe you could like tell us a little bit about those invaluable tools that are in the book and talk us through the structure and how it applies actually to companies of different sizes, because that's something that it does as well. It's not just like for the entry level, it's like it really covers companies of all sizes.
Yeah, exactly. So look, first, what was the original idea of the book? We saw that there are a lot of startup books out there for the early phases, how to launch your startup, but there is not a lot of knowledge yet on how to scale a startup. So imagine you and your team, you have 10, 20 people, you are close to product market fit. It's like sailing on a pirate ship. On a pirate ship, you can climb the pole together with your team, reset sails, and the ship turns very fast. Mm-hmm. But if you scale now from 20 employees to 200, 300, after finding product market fit, it's like beaming yourself up from the deck of your pirate ship to the bridge of a spaceship. You're no longer Jack Sparrow, Captain Jack Sparrow. You're more James T. Kirk or the female equivalents. And that's the logic of the book. So how can you accelerate and scale an existing startup? So that was the original thought. But now we recognized in the last year that actually what we've written is quite relevant for many early stage startup builders as well, because many topics which you have later are relevant early as well. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of positive. You ask for structure. We have written along four dimensions in this book. First, North Star, how to set an attractive North Star in your direction. Mm-hmm. Two, how to find and retain a AAA team. Three, functional excellence. Mm-hmm. That means we went through all the key functions of a startup, mm-hmm. marketing, product, tech, operations, sales, etc. And for each of these functions, we have written down org charts, objective and key results, some practices, and then finally growth capital, how to find growth capital. That's the structure mm-hmm. of it.
The one thing, obviously, that I always have to ask someone who writes a book for startup entrepreneurs of different sizes is like, because what I always see is that when you're a startup entrepreneur, you struggle to keep the balls in the air and you focus just like on the keep the boat afloat. So how do you convince a startup entrepreneur that he must read the book? Because there are some, as I said before, there are fantastic tools in there, but how do you convince someone in that field to dedicate the time to actually pick it up?
Yeah, exactly. Good question. We are seeing in the entrepreneurship education space a lot of movement and a lot of noise as well. Yeah, there are hundreds of podcasts, hundreds of books, hundreds of posts and blog posts. The aspiration with the book was to build a starting point. So you don't have to listen to 100 podcasts and read 100 books. You read the Builder's Guide and have a starting point and a baseline for the rest. So that's why we believe that it's a very well spent time. And as well, it's written, as you said, we have 99 practices, so you don't have to read it from cover to cover. Mm. You just start reading with certain practices which are of relevant to you.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good point, because we could like talk about like all the different elements of the book that you just mentioned. It's like the book focuses on the practices for human resources, project management, technology, marketing, sales, and so on. But I don't think there's much point in talking about the specific chapters here as we are, because I think that applies. I think everyone should read that respectively to their own enterprise and then kind of like draw their own conclusions and make the necessary amendments. But one chapter that I want to pick up is the last one you already mentioned, because growth capital is always a very sensitive chapter, object. So without taking too much away, when people should read it, as I said, like it's a very interesting chapter because it's divided into two parts, if I got it correctly. First one is about the key pitfalls to avoid for scale-up builders. So from your own experience, what is the most relevant trap startups usually step into?
Yeah, in particular fundraising, that's the question, right? So how do you get the fundraising right? In particular for growth stages, but as well, as I said before, for the earlier phases, this matters just the same. Mm. So there is a secret sauce which we use as well as Techstars. So let me just give you a couple of insights into this. So first error is not being perfectly prepared for fundraising. We're seeing this very often, that startups stumble into fundraising mode. This is a dangerous thing. Fundraising can be absolutely soul crushing. If you do this for 9 to 12 months, you want to do this in a short and very focused time period. Not being perfectly prepared just means you need to have a couple of documents really, really on a world-class level to be prepared. So such as your full investor deck, of course, a financial model. You need an investor pipeline sheet where you write down your 50, 60 investor on a person basis and why you think they are the best for your startup. You need a super clean capitalization table. You need an FAQ list. You need a company one pager. Yeah, these typical things. There's often the question, how much do you really need? Of course, the larger you are, the more approach mm-hmm. Series A, Series B, the more you need. But in particular for the earlier phases, it's the better you are prepared, the better your documents are, the better the pitches, it just massively increases your odds of fundraising success. Mm. So that's one typical error, being really prepared on a document level. Mm. This includes as well, of course, a certain level of traction on your business model that you can show in some numbers. Mm. In the early phases, this might mean LOIs or early customers, some first revenues. In the later phases, there are typical KPIs. We've written about them in the book, such as lifetime value over customer acquisition cost is a typical one, sales cycle, et cetera, which proves your unit economics. So that's one area. The second, mm-hmm. not creating enough fear of missing out with investors. Mm-hmm. And a really good fundraising process is if you make sure to have 40 to 50 calls with investors in a couple of weeks. So how this usually works is that the CEO in particular only does fundraising preparation for a couple of weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, then does 40 to 60 investor calls in 3 to 4 weeks. So you need to line them up and then communicate that you are now the next hot property. Yeah, you can do this. For example, if an investor says, hey, interesting, let's have another conversation with you maybe next Tuesday, then you say, hey, next Tuesday, I've already lined up 4 investor calls. Why don't we do Thursday? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this kind of creation of fear of missing out, this very important, time kills all deals. Time is working against you. Mm-hmm. So this is why it's really important to have this very short fundraising process. And then being too humble with investors as well, a typical thing. You should always, as an entrepreneur, as well ask an investor, why should I take your money? Why you? Mm. Yeah, let them reverse pitch. This is 3 typical errors. Now we are in a crisis. There are a couple of specifics now in the upcoming recession. Everything connecting to a recession-proof business model. So you help, for example, other businesses save costs is currently really attractive. So I have many talks with investors who tell me, I'm only investing now in businesses which benefit from the crisis.
Would you also agree, adding to the 3 points that you just mentioned, that given that, like, one of the reasons that people rush into fundraising mode is that obviously they want to raise funds as early as possible or need money most oftenly sooner than expected, that people underestimate the engagement that is required during the fundraising process?
Yeah, absolutely. This is underestimated totally. It's underestimated in particular the preparation it requires. Yeah. So often startups think, hey, I'm putting together a pitch deck. Maybe I'm testing it with 2 or 3 friends and then let's go. That's not how to do it.
Yeah. No, interesting. Because like you said, this is like something that I thought is also often a bit of an issue. That's like what people complain about, and the time being taken away from the core business whilst you're in fundraising mode.
Yeah, exactly.
Can be or is often a massive, massive strain.
Yeah, and you know, we are not here in a business of doing fundraising, right? We're in a business of building businesses. So, and to really ensure this is a short amount of time, it's just so crucial.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, because like eventually every startup founder is like an expert in building whatever product, service they had the great idea for. And you said like financing is obviously something that people are not very fond of. And the other thing is the legal element of the business. And that takes us to the second part of the chapter that we're just discussing, and that's the term sheets, which is an old favorite of mine, which is probably back from the days in investment banking, because you always saw it's like how much fun that generates or not. And in a book, like it's really good because it gives you that kind of checklist and shows you it's like the 15 most important term sheet elements that you have to focus on during a growth round. Again, which one, if you had to pick one, is the one problem that you see the most and why?
So let's maybe not now walk through a term sheet, a single term sheet. It's just that we've written this in the book as an overview, as you're saying, together with a couple of lawyers. So it's I think, a good starting point. But maybe three typical pitfalls when you think about term sheets, in particular in the earlier phases. So the first, not taking the best lawyer you can possibly find. I'm seeing this when I work with many early startups. They just underestimate the relevance of lawyers. You need a lawyer, you need a top lawyer to negotiate a term sheet with an VC, because simply you have not negotiated term sheets a lot. Yeah. And VC does this hundreds of times over their fund life. You do it a couple of times, you know, so they're massively an advantage. That's why you need a lawyer a specialized lawyer who ideally has worked in your industry and has done several VC finance deals, and ideally comes from a top corporate legal firm who has worked there at one point, you know, Osborne Clark, S&P or so. So this costs a lot of money. I would always try to negotiate with lawyers some kind of cap. So i.e. I will not pay you more than X for this whole negotiation, so that the clock at some point stops. But I cannot emphasize enough how much this pays off if you work with a good lawyer in term sheet negotiations. So that's one. Two, do not concede topics in early days that will put off later stage investors. Very, very important. Every investor later on will ask for the same concessions you have given the early stage investors. So typical things here are, ideally you do not agree on multiples, liquidation multiples of more than one. Ideally, you don't have free investor sales right for shares, and you have ideally approval thresholds that are at market standard and not below. So in particular, when it comes to hiring or do investments. Yeah, so that's typical. Point nine has published an so-called vanilla early stage term sheet. If you can Google for point nine and term sheet, that you will find it. So that's a good way of looking at this. Unfortunately, now with the crisis, we see some of the, you know, and not so entrepreneur friendly terms creeping back in. I would, of course, as entrepreneur, try to fight this. Yeah. And then last point, not agreeing to optimistic valuations. This is less a problem now than it has been in the years ago, because if you have a very, very optimistic valuation, you run the risks of doing down rounds later on.
Well, as I said, like I think it's an excellent collection of tools and practices. But to wrap it up, and I already mentioned how grateful I am for your time in this. It's like I think we can all agree that you have an extensive experience with startups in your previous career. Now with TechStars, you come across lots and lots of startups, and I appreciate it's a tricky questions. That's why I kept it for the finish. But in your long history in the business, if you had to pick one company that impressed you the most, which one would it be, and why would you pick it?
So look, I'm this year alone, we invested in 24 startups. So I will, of course, say that they are all very, very impressive because we've selected them. So let me just give you some examples, maybe.
Sure.
So one company which we're currently working with is called Telekinesis. They are doing visual programming for robots for SME manufacturing. So, you know, this is such one of these teams with really fantastic product market fit. Two robot enthusiasts having written a master thesis on visual robot programming, working at one of the best robotics departments in Germany. Strong, super strong learner who want to run this high velocity learning curves. So that's in a hot space where they save costs for SMEs now in the crisis, perfect. So that's one of these examples which we just love to work with. Another one is Trudenti. It's a digital identity management platform for banks. Lerato is the CEO, and she's already convinced banks in South Africa working with her and trying this out, piloting this within weeks. So this is totally cool. Or the third one, Hexa Farms. This is another techstar startup, and they are developing SaaS solutions for indoor farm optimization. You know, feeding cities, big topic, enabling in-house or even vertical farming. Super, super exciting as well. A totally great founder. Super strong product market fit. So yeah, it's very difficult for me to pick one because I'm very excited about all the startups I'm working with. So yeah.
No, I appreciate it. As I said, like I'm fully aware it's like a tricky question. I didn't want to trick you into anything, but like it's great that you share this kind of practical examples and what makes them great. Martin, many thanks for taking the time today. It was really great talking to you. Again, I appreciate taking the time. Cheers.
Super, Jochen. Thanks for joining and thanks for having me here.
Cheers.
And that's all for today. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Martin. And as always, you can find additional information on the website. Again, many thanks for listening. Bye for now.